This episode of The Accidental Entrepreneur is sponsored by NowSite Marketing, the first all-in-one marketing platform powered by artificial intelligence. Bring all your digital marketing to a new level with their simple three-click method. And by Digital Accelerant, the digital mobile business card. Text the word LAW to 21,000 to get connected and learn how to get your own digital business card. And by Fetch Internet, the secure high-speed app that eliminates the need to pay for hotspots or use public unsecure Wi-Fi. Listen to all of our sponsors' commercials later in this episode and follow their links in the show notes to learn more about their products and services.
Because is just a mess?
Yeah, well, and the interesting thing is most business owners, most executives truly do not understand what their clutter is costing them from a profit and productivity standpoint.
So
let me give you an example. There was a study done recently that said for every 5 employees a company hires, only 4 are doing what they're paid to do because the 5th one is looking for something in order to do what they're supposed to be doing.
They're looking not organized,
for
right.
That's right. They're looking for a piece of equipment, or they're looking for an email attachment, or they're looking for a document, or they're looking for a form, or like, and that's absolutely true. So we have developed what we call the 7 information management questions, which every organization should answer, which is, what information do you need to keep? In what form? For how long? Who's responsible for filing it? Who needs access to it? How do we find it, and how is it backed up? Every single time that somebody can't find what they need, it's because one of those questions hasn't been addressed.
I think we mentioned that that's a Barbara-ism.
The information provided in these episodes is for entertainment purposes only. It is not a guarantee of success or to be construed as advice of any kind. You should always seek advice from local licensed professionals before making any decisions.
The dictionary defines an entrepreneur as a person who organizes and manages any enterprise, especially a business, usually with considerable initiative and risk. People often start a business without much choice, perhaps due to a job loss or just being dissatisfied at work, and they come up with an idea they just know can be successful. They become entrepreneurs by accident. That is to say, their success or failure happens by accident, not with intention. My name is Mitch Beinhacker. I'm a corporate attorney and a business advisor. You're listening to The Accidental Entrepreneur, my podcast about how to achieve success on purpose, not by accident. Join me along with our monthly guests where we share our knowledge and help you get a hold of your business. And now on to today's episode. Hey everyone, it's Mitch, your host, and welcome to today's show. Just to remind you, the podcast is produced and brought to you by my legal practice, Beinhacker Law. We provide business and estate services to entrepreneurs, inventors, and other small business owners. Whether you're just getting started or you've been operating for a long time, contact us for all your general legal needs, from contracts to client agreements, from purchasing a new location to onboarding a new partner or key employee. We draft all types of agreements and handle most business transactions. For more information about our products and services, visit beinhackerlaw.com or you can follow our link in the show notes. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoyed today's interview.
Hello, I'm Barbara Hemphill. I'm founder of Productive Environment Institute, and our passion is helping people accomplish their work and enjoy their lives. One of the things that prevents them from doing that is clutter, and clutter comes in many forms. It comes in physical, digital, and my new book, Less Clutter, More Life, says that physical and digital clutter is a symptom of emotional and spiritual clutter. So when you remove the clutter, you will increase profit, productivity, and peace of mind.
All right, Barbara, thanks for coming on the show. And I know we talked a little while ago, but it was good to get you all set up with all the stuff. I know you have a new book out and you had all kinds of stuff. And I thought that the whole concept of like decluttering your life, especially from a business standpoint, is fascinating as to how it really affects productivity of the people in the company. But maybe we go back, let's go back a ways back to your background and your training and, you know, how it worked up to becoming the queen of, you're not the queen of clutter, you're the queen of removing clutter, right?
Oh, hope so anyway. And that story, as I go back, it goes back a long ways. I have been an entrepreneur for 43 years, which is just amazes me. And what's exciting, I love entrepreneurship. Well, my story is a long one. I actually started 43 years ago. My first husband and I lived in India. We adopted Wow. three orphan children, one of whom had special needs. We moved to New York City, and he worked for a nonprofit and didn't make enough money.
How did you end up in India? Is your first husband Indian?
No. He was American, but it was during the Vietnam War.
Oh,
and okay. He was a conscientious objector.
Okay.
And in those days, you could do work for the government that was not related to war, basically. And so we got an assignment in India working for a organization called Trip to World Service, which worked with USAID, a government agency distributing food.
Got it.
And,
okay.
I need to know that.
That was important.
Yeah, we started in the West Indies in the island of Grenada.
Sure.
And from there, we left there actually in the middle of the night because there was some fraud going on, and we called it and we were threatened. And
really?
So then we moved to India.
It's exciting.
Okay. Yeah. And we were in India for almost 5 years.
Okay.
And we adopted the three children.
Okay.
And I wanted to make my children my number one priority. And which meant working for somebody else wasn't an option. So it's like, okay, I need to work for myself. I was a music degree. I graduated with a degree in music, and I've been a music teacher. I taught school for 1 year, was miserable every single day because I love music and I didn't love teaching it to people who didn't want to learn it. I was
right,
in elementary
school.
Right,
the kids are all forced, right? They're like, oh, you got to do this.
Yeah, but the thing I realized, it took me a long time, was that I dislike structure very much. And so the idea that I knew where I was going to be every hour of the day for 9 months was like put me in prison. So I decided that the best way to bring income into my family was to listen for a problem in the world that I could solve that people would pay me for.
Okay. That's
so I sat on the playground.
That's what every entrepreneur should do.
Yeah.
Right?
That's exactly right. I mean, some of the best businesses in the world have been started that way.
Yeah.
So I was on the playground in New York City, and I would just listen to people's conversations. I grew up on a farm, so I'm fairly handy. I knew how to do simple electrical connection fixings and plumbing and things like that.
Okay.
But in New York, there's unions, so you can't do that.
No.
So then I heard people complaining about clutter or about things like we can't file our income taxes because we don't have all the receipts, or I'm always late, or I'm always fighting with my kids about their messy rooms, or maybe my spouse about the kitchen counter because I want to cook and there's stuff all over it.
Right.
And I thought, they didn't have my mom. And I grew up in the second floor of a tenant farmhouse in Nebraska.
Okay.
And my mother worked full time. She was an assistant to the president and owner of a bank for 46 years.
Okay.
And very smart woman. If she'd lived in my age, she probably would have been president. and my father was a farmer, so they always had systems. There were ways we did things. Like I can remember my mother saying, "If you're going upstairs, take something with you."
Yeah,
and
don't
I
go empty-handed. Right.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. And my father saying half of any job is having the right tool. And just things I grew up with, always this is the way we did. It didn't mean that our house wasn't cluttered, but if the phone rang and it was the pastor calling and he was going to be there in 30 minutes, we could put everything away, and we put it away in the right place. We didn't stuff it somewhere.
Right.
So
yeah.
The adage about a place for everything and everything in its place is half right. And that statement, in fact, has done a lot of damage because people think, well, I can't do that, so therefore I can't be organized. Well, forget it. I mean,
so this was in Nebraska?
Uh-huh, yeah.
Was it corn? That's corn country, right?
corn and soybeans and Holstein dairy.
Oh yeah, cows. Holstein cattle. Yeah, okay.
My brother still lives on that farm where I grew up. So
when I was working at the IRS, I did some work on a Holstein cattle like tax shelter. You know, they were investigating. I'd never heard of Holstein cattle before, but that's how I got exposed to it.
It's wild.
Yeah. I don't think the cattle ever existed. That was the problem.
Right. Yeah, that was a problem. Right. Exactly. Yeah. Well, any rate, I ran an ad. I collected $7 in New York City from the grocery money, which is a big deal because I literally used to walk 20 blocks because I didn't have 50 cents to the bus. And I collected $7 and I ran an ad in a little local newspaper that said, disorganized, I organize closets, files, kitchens, you name it, called Barbara Hemphill.
Now, this is when you're back living in New York City. You have the three children that you adopted from India, and your husband also has a job. He's doing something else. Okay.
1978.
Okay. Was he still working for the government?
No, he was working. He was working for a Church World Service.
Okay. Same company. Yeah.
Same company, but he was working in the U.S. instead of overseas.
Right. Yep. Okay. 1978. Got it.
So like a lot of entrepreneurs, I had a bumpy start. The bumpy start was three crank calls from guys trying to pick me up.
Oh, nice.
And the fourth call was from a woman, a widow. She was 55. Her husband was a lawyer.
Okay.
He died suddenly. His office didn't look like your office looks.
Well, I'm hiding. That's a fake background. I don't want to show you what my office looks. You'll have a heart attack. It's not that bad though. I'm pretty organized. Go ahead.
His office at home and at work was just papers everywhere. And she did not have a clue what was going on. And they didn't have any children. So in many ways, I did what a daughter probably would have done. She did not know that I was her first client and I didn't tell her. But
right.
I just
of course
started
you wouldn't
going,
tell her. Tell her you specialize in this stuff, right? I mean, fake it till you make it.
That's right.
Right. Yeah. Okay. And what all good entrepreneurs do, by the way, Barbara. That's what they do. I interviewed a guy who started this window washing business and he was a kid. Well, he was in his 20s or 30s. He went around to the neighborhood telling him, we specialize in working with stores in your area. And, you know, he got a lot to sign up. They all had confidence in him.
Well, and the key in what he said was specialize.
Right.
So a story we'll get to is that my company has a training program for certified productive environment specialists.
Right, which I think is a brilliant idea, but we'll get to that. So you had told me that.
Great. I charged $10 an hour and lived in horror that someone would ask me what made me think I was worth $10 an hour. Right. But she was happy with the results. I had very few clients, three or four maybe, and my husband got transferred to Washington, D.C.,
You've been all over the place.
Yes. So I went there and I contacted the editor of the Washingtonian magazine. Which
is it even around anymore?
Yes.
Still oh, it is. Okay.
Yeah, it is. Okay. And I contacted the editor. I actually got her on the phone and she was fascinated. I said, I've just moved here from New York City and I have a service which I think would be of interest to your readers. And we had this 45-minute conversation, and the next thing I knew, she was sending a photographer to my house to take a picture to get a story in the magazine. It's like, wow.
Yeah. A little luck now, never hurts, right? But you're out there talking. Well, you reached out to her, though, right?
I did.
Yeah. Okay. So it wasn't really luck. Also the smarts. Key. Yeah.
So the key of an entrepreneur. I mean, You have to be willing to take risks.
Put yourself out there. Yeah. And they're all looking for content and interesting stories, right? So, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and you learn from every no gives you an idea. So,
right.
Anyway, they did this story with my picture, actually. It showed me sitting on a file cabinet and said, for $10 an hour, you could get Barbara Hemphill to come to your house to organize your files.
So this was a residential. So this is home organization at this point.
Organization. Okay. At that point, it was home organization. And I very quickly learned that paper was the number one organizing problem.
Of course.
That was
especially in those days. There's no digital anything. Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And the question that clients asked me was, how long do you keep? And in those days, one of the questions was bank statements, because right. back then you got your canceled checks in those yeah. big thick envelopes, and everybody saved them for decades.
Decades. Yeah, you didn't need them that long.
And so I would say to them, what's the purpose of a bank statement? And a lot of them didn't really have an answer, but most of them would say, well, to balance your checkbook. These same people that had been keeping their checkbook for decades right. never
balanced. They just would keep them with their checks and put them in the thing, in the file cabinet?
They had numbers on them. And so everybody thinks if they have numbers, right. the IRS wants it.
Right. Well, they might, but they're not going to go back more than 7 years.
That's exactly. Well, and even then, they're not going to go to the bank statement, because right, the statement doesn't
unless say you're a business owner, they don't want your bank statements. Yeah. What's that going to do for you?
So, any rate, when they asked me how long do you keep it, I didn't really know the answer. So I thought, well, I'll just go to the library and I'll get a book on the subject. And I discovered there wasn't a book on how long to keep not only bank statements, but
papers,
insurance
right?
yeah. policies and you know, just all that, medical records, all of that.
Right.
So I wrote a book called Taming the Paper Tiger.
Oh, that's where that came from. Okay.
That's where that came from. That
this was
in
what year? Yeah.
1988.
Okay. All right. 1988. All right.
Now, the exciting thing.
4 years away from the internet.
That's right. It was published by a major publisher. It was Dodd Mead. Dodd Mead had been in business since 1896 or something.
Never heard of it.
Well, that's because they're not in business. And not only that, but my book was printed. It was excerpted worldwide in Reader's Digest.
Oh.
At the moment.
Most of my readers probably don't know what Reader's Digest is, because it's been a long time. Right.
Yeah. At the same time that Dodd Mead declared bankruptcy.
Wow. But so you got it out.
Yeah, I got it out. And 10 years later, a woman in France told me that she read that article and tried to find the book, but the book wasn't available anymore.
Oh, because they never made it, because they went into bankruptcy.
So they had no way to distribute it.
Okay.
Not only that, it gets worse. I had to buy the rights back.
From the bankrupt trustee. Yeah, it was an asset of the, did he charge you a lot or was he reasonable about it? How much?
$10,000.
That's a lot for an unpublished book, basically, a manuscript that you wrote.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Eesh. So then I had to go to the bank and borrow the money because I didn't have the money to buy it back. You know, how I was able to get that, I mean, that was a miracle.
Yeah, it wasn't like they paid you $10,000 up front for the book. No, they didn't pay anything. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I did get it. No, I did
you
get
some. You got an advance?
Yeah. Yeah, I got an advance. So I had some from the advance, but not enough. So at any rate, I bought it, but I bought the rights back. And then I was like, okay, but I still didn't have physical books, right? I had the rights, but I had no physical books.
Yeah. And there was no on-demand printing. You couldn't self-publish in 1988. You had to go to a publishing house, right?
Yeah. So yeah. I called, there was an office supply company at that time called Viking Office Supply.
Okay.
And Viking, the president was Irwin Helford, and his picture was on the front of the catalog. And it said, if you buy $100 worth of products, we'll send you a clock.
Okay.
Well, I thought, you know what? My book talks about all the stuff they sell. Maybe they'd buy my book as a premium and give it that instead of a clock. So this was back before the days of voicemail and all that kind of stuff. And he was in California. So I called at 7:30 in the morning. I kept trying. I got him at 7:30 in the morning. I introduced myself.
Huh?
His time.
Okay.
His time.
You're in DC at this point.
I was in DC.
Okay.
So I introduced myself and I said, I've written this book that talks about the supplies that you sell. And I wonder if you would buy some to use as a premium. So he turned me over to somebody else there, and they bought 27,000 copies.
27,000?
27,000 copies.
Okay. That's good. That's a good sale.
So then I had, and it wasn't at a bit, I don't even remember the price. It was $3 and something. I mean, it wasn't a huge amount of
But it's getting your book out there now, right?
That's right. Well, and it was a purchase order. It gave me a purchase order so that I could take the purchase order to the bank to borrow the money.
You hadn't paid for the thing yet?
I'd paid for the rights, but I had to deliver books.
Got it. Okay. Right. You didn't have the books. They ordered 27,000 books. Now what are you going to do? Right.
So I took the purchase order.
Why should that be an obstacle to you? That doesn't matter. You don't need that. Yeah, that's great.
So I took that purchase order to the bank, borrowed the money, and then went to a printer. So this wasn't like a book publisher. I went to a Port City Press in Baltimore, Maryland, and I said, I need to print these books. And so I actually printed 35,000 so that I had the 27,000 for them and I had something for me. So the rest of mine were in my house.
Okay.
And I quickly learned that I didn't want to be a distributor.
Right. You don't want to touch the book.
So I went to the distributors that were distributing my book that I had made arrangements with. And I said, I didn't want to be the publisher. I mean, I didn't want to be a self-published book. So I went to the distributors that I was using and I said, who are you distributing for? What publisher are you distributing for that might be interested in this book?
Right.
And so they gave me several names and one of them was Kiplinger. And Kiplinger was a very well established company. So I went to them and proposed it. And they said, well, all of our books are printed by our employees. I mean, are written by our employees, by not anybody else. So they turned me down. And then a few weeks later, I got a phone call saying they changed their minds and they really wanted the book.
Okay.
And the really exciting news was they called in November and they wanted the book in print by April because they wanted it out in time for tax time.
Okay. Is that doable?
That's unheard of because with a publisher, normally it's 18 to 24 months.
Why?
So here it was that I was going to be able to get it out, you know, really quickly.
Why did it normally take that with a traditional publisher?
Well, that's just what, with a major publisher, it frequently takes a really long time.
Because they have other books in line to be, bound and, yeah, okay. That's exactly. The conveyor belt's 18 months.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Yeah.
So that was so then that gave it credibility, the fact that it had been published by a recognized publisher. And then it went through several versions. We did Taming the Paper Tiger. Then we did Taming the Paper Tiger at Home. And then we did Taming the Office Tiger, which bombed because people thought Office Tiger was sexual harassment.
Now there's like Taming the Office Cougar, I think would be sexual harassment, right? That's pretty funny. What year was that at that point?
In the late 80s, I guess.
Okay.
Early 90s.
All right.
So then we did Taming the Paper Tiger. I did two books, Taming the Paper Tiger at Home and Taming the Paper Tiger at Work. And then that's what really launched my name as the Paper Tiger Lady. So for many years, over 20 years, I wore jungle paraphernalia everywhere I went. I had tiger suitcases and tiger umbrellas and tiger briefcases and things like that. And I partnered with a software company to actually develop software, which exists today. I'm no longer affiliated with them, but some of our clients use the product. It still exists and it's fine.
They own the product.
They own the product. It was based on the, here's a story. You talked about technology just coming. When I signed the contract with the publisher,
right,
in the fine print, it said they had electronic rights.
To the digital publisher.
But in 1992, digital rights, what did that mean?
Right. I mean, 1992 was the first year I probably heard about the internet.
Yeah. I mean, it didn't mean anything. So then when the software company came to partner with me, I had basically sold my electronic rights. So they couldn't negotiate with me.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, just things happen.
You don't think about it, right?
Yeah. You keep going forward.
Yeah.
So at any rate, I quickly learned, even back in when I was in Washington, D.C., one of my residential clients was a real estate agent.
Okay.
And so I did her home And then I did her car, because every real estate agent's car is basically an office, right? Then I did her office. And then she said to me, would you come and speak to the Board of Realtors? And at that point, I'd done a lot of speeches because I would speak for garden clubs and church groups and PTAs. That's how I promoted my business. I would do a speech on 10 ways to organize your kids, 10 ways to organize your files, 10 ways to get organized for Christmas, et cetera, et cetera.
Were you a member of, what's it called? The National Association of Professional Organizers? Or did it exist then?
It didn't exist.
Ah, okay.
It was nothing. In fact, when I forgot one of the best part of the stories. When I went to Washington, D.C., I went to the Small Business Administration, mm-hmm. told them about the business I wanted to start, and asked for help. And they laughed me out of the room and said, this is not a business. Nobody is going to pay for organizing closets and cupboards and kitchens.
Right. Were they all men?
But I didn't. Huh?
Were they all men? Of course. There you go. Yeah, it's embarrassing to be a man sometimes. So, okay.
At any rate, I just didn't listen to them.
Yeah, don't listen. Don't participate in their ridiculousness. Yeah. Okay.
So, and so to promote it, I would just speak everywhere I could. And I wrote articles. I'd get articles submitted.
Right.
And
thought leadership.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's what people should do more of. Right. Absolutely.
We didn't know that term then. But
right. But that's what you were. You were a thought leader in the organizing. You were leading the organizing business, actually. You started the whole thing. Really.
Well, I said I've been a pioneer. Yeah. I mean, it literally was. But here's the interesting thing, Mitch.
And now a word from our sponsors. NowSite Marketing, the first all-in-one marketing platform powered by artificial intelligence. It's everything you need to market online, and it's totally automated. Build custom websites, optimize them for Google rankings, and automatically create ads and social media posts to drive the most traffic to your sites. Their fully integrated system generates regular email newsletters, manages all your customers and prospects, and provides up-to-date marketing analytics. NowSite. You do your thing, and we'll do the marketing. Use our affiliate link in the show notes to learn more about NowSite and how it can help your business. Uplift your marketing and reinforce your brand with a digital business card from Digital Accelerant. Use a text marketing combination to stand out in front of your competition. Digital business cards make you memorable, and most of all, help you bring in new business through its warm lead generator. Motion graphics, intro, outro, and inspirational videos can be added during setup. Text the word LAW to 21000. That's LAW to 21000. Or follow our link in the show notes to learn how you can get this valuable tool for you and your company. Suffering from slow internet speed? Worried about hackers? Fetch Pro gets the internet from your smartphone to your Windows and Mac computer without paying for a hotspot. Always get the fastest, most stable, and secure internet access on your computer with Fetch Pro. Follow their link in our show notes to learn more and get connected with Fetch. And now back to our show.
I've been in so that real estate agent said to me, would you speak to the Board of Realtors? And I said, yes. And she said, how much would you charge? And I said, she said, how many people were there? I said, she said, I think there are 100 or something like that. And so I said, $500. And
I never. Is that a lot of money to you at that point?
Oh my gosh. That would be like today saying.
10 grand, right?
Yeah, really.
Yeah.
And she said, okay. And I'm thinking, really?
Should I have said higher? I should have said higher. Right. She said 2,500.
But that opened up my whole world, you know, in terms of, there's a lot here. And I quickly discovered. She said, would you come to the office with me? I said, well, sure, I will. I don't know if I can do it, but I'll come. And if I can do it, you pay me. And if I can't do anything, I'll leave and, you know, no hard feelings. Okay. Well, I got there and discovered the principles are the same.
Yeah.
I mean, a filing system is a filing system. It doesn't matter if it's a filing system at home or a filing system at business, because we don't call them in our company, we don't call them filing systems. We call them finding systems. Because the issue is, I don't tell people what to do. I ask them what they will do. So I'm just the facilitator. They have the answers. I don't have the answers. They have the answers.
Right. You got to work around the way they work, the way they think, right? And you're, it's funny when you say finding system, it's true, because in the past, when you would have a filing system, that doesn't mean you could find anything. It just put away and it's neat. But if you had to find it, it becomes difficult. Yeah.
That's exactly right. And most filing systems, in fact, I remember having a president of a bank as the client, and I asked to look at his files. I looked at his files and I looked at him. I said, "You've had three assistants, haven't you?" And he said, "How did you know?" And I said, "Because there's three different files."
You could tell when it changed each time. Yeah. It's probably true in most offices. You can tell.
Because the new person doesn't want to throw away the old person's stuff. You know, they're, but anyway, the bottom line is I quickly learned that organizing in business was just as important and just as needed. But you know what's sad is that was 35 years ago. And to be honest, Mitch, I feel like I am with organizing business now where I was with residential 40 years ago.
Because is just a mess?
Yeah, well, and the interesting thing is most business owners, most executives truly do not understand what their clutter is costing them from a profit and productivity standpoint.
So
let me give you an example. There was a study done recently that said for every five employees a company hires, only four are doing what they're paid to do because the fifth one is looking for something in order to do what they're supposed to be doing. That's right. They're looking for a piece of equipment, or they're looking for an email attachment, or they're looking for a document, or they're looking for a form, or like, and that's absolutely true. So we have developed what we call the seven information management questions, which every organization should answer, which is, what information do you need to keep? In what form? For how long? Who's responsible for filing it? Who needs access to it? How do we find it? And how is it backed up? Every single time that somebody can't find what they need, it's because one of those questions hasn't been addressed.
I think we mentioned that that's a Barbara-ism. Because you came up with those 7 points, right?
Yeah, I did. Those are one of our practices that
we. Anybody's listening, write that down.
That we've tried. Well, it's I say it all the time.
Is it in your book?
In Portia in Merchant of Venice says, if only to know where to do. So you can go, we just did a webinar called tameyourpapertiger.com.
Okay.
It's a free webinar. If you go there, anybody can listen to it. Those 7 questions are there. All the things we teach are there. There's everything on that webinar that you need to know to organize your office is there. But the percentage of people that will actually do it is very small. And here's the reason why. My business has been based on 4 words, which I learned originally from closed closets.
Okay.
Clutter is postponed decisions.
100%. You put things aside. Yeah, I'll get to that later. And then if you do a 50 of those, you're never going to get to. Yeah. That's another right. Barbarism.
So though that, and that's a registered trademark. And what's interesting is if you go to Google and you Google that, you'll see me quoted many times, but most of the time I'm misquoted. People add a word in it. They will say clutter is simply postponed decisions, or only postponed decisions, or merely postponed decisions, or just. So think about it. If you have trouble making decisions, which many people do.
Yep, we're paralyzed and then, by our own lives.
That's right. And then somebody says, oh, it's just postponed decisions. How does that make you feel?
Make your decision.
Well, yeah, you know, you feel, so if you're having trouble, so it's really difficult for us to get people to be willing to ask for help because we're made to feel either that you're supposed to be organized because that's just something you should be. So especially our clients are some of the, we don't work with hoarders. We work with some of the smartest, most creative business owners in the world.
Sure.
So if they're having trouble with that, and then somebody says, oh, it's just postponed decisions, it's like, well, then that means there's something wrong with me. There's something wrong with me that I'm not doing this.
Making the decisions.
So paper is where I started because paper is the most difficult. And here's the good news. If you get paper under control, and we have a system that literally, if you will spend 8 hours with us virtually,
right,
we can change your life forever. We have people, I have call after call, a university professor called 23 years ago. I worked with her for 8 hours, put our finding system in place. 23 years later, she is still using it.
And we're talking professionals and business owners. You don't work with homeowners anymore.
Yep.
Okay.
The only thing we do with homeowners is home offices, and we do a lot.
Right. Okay. But still business related.
Still business related. That's okay. Exactly right. So productive environment, my company that I founded is called Productive Environment Institute.
Okay.
And I believe in the Bible, in Esther, it talks about a story about a woman who it was written up that she was supposed to go and see the king, and it might mean that she would die, but she went there anyway. And her uncle told her, you were born for such a time as this. I feel that Productive Environment Institute was born for this time, because what's coming out of COVID,
the digital age,
the digital age for sure, because clutter is postponed decisions. And so many companies never learned to manage paper.
Right.
Most did not.
And it's all been piling up for 4 months. Nothing happened.
So then they say, oh, well, we don't have to organize this paper because we're going to go digital. So what do we have now? We have a bigger, faster, hidden mess.
Right. No. It's like, you know, those cubicles, and you have right next to you, there's one of those cubicles where the shelves, you put everything in, you close it. It's the same thing. It's just in digital form. You got to have it available, you know, that's why I like the Google system that I use. If I need to find a document, I can put in, I needed an indemnification today, and I don't remember. I put it in, and 4 clients came up that I worked on indemnification agreements. I mean, if it was in PDF, it wouldn't have worked. They were Word documents, but.
Yeah. Well, so what we do is we help create systems for organizing. Your ability to accomplish any task or goal is directly related to your ability to find what you need when you need it, whatever that is.
That's logical. Sure.
So clutter is postponed decisions. The good news is with information, there's only 3 decisions you can make.
Not
we
seven.
Call it file, act, or toss.
Okay.
File means, I don't know if I'll ever need it, but I don't have the guts to throw it away.
And you don't need
or
it.
Or hit delete.
Right.
So then that means we need a filing or a finding system. Act means the ball is in my court to do it. So then that means we need a system to make sure we know exactly what the next action is and when we need to do it. And then toss simply means, okay, we need as a company to have a records retention program so that we're not keeping what we really don't need, you know, we really don't need.
Right.
So we use the acronym for system of saving you space, time, energy, and money.
I like that.
Every time there's something you need to repeat, an action you need to take again over and over, you need a system. So it's not enough to make a decision. First of all, you have to make the decision, but it's not enough to make it. You have to have a way to implement that decision. So if you look at a document or a piece of paper, whether it's paper or digital, and say, okay, I don't need this until November, then it's like, okay, what is your system so that in November, there's going to be a trigger that's going to say, you need to pull that piece of paper out right now.
Yeah, leaving it on your desk until November is not the system.
Which lots of people do, which is why they shuffle and they just hope it comes, you know, together.
Yeah, I think it's very common. I do the same thing. Like I'll do an action once. And then if I realize I'm doing it multiple times, that's when I say to myself, wait, I need a system for this. I can't, you know, I used to do the podcast where I would make a note about, you know, sending this day. Oh, I should remind you the day before. And then I realized, wait a second, I can just schedule an email. And I set it up right from the beginning on the 2 weeks before, you will get a notice that says we have the podcast ready, review it, give me comments. And then the day before, you get a reminder, it's coming about tomorrow with a promotional sheet. And I could set that all up and forget about it.
Isn't that awesome? I mean, it's really exciting. So here's something we want to talk about. That's probably the most important thing I have to say. And there are thousands. I'm past president of the National Association of Professional Organizers.
Okay.
So there are thousands of people out there who call themselves organizing consultants. The problem is that most of them think it's about the stuff. So they go in and they organize it.
Right.
And then 6 months later, it's back where it was before, which means that the clients feel even worse than before.
Right.
In fact, I had someone that I knew, known her for a long time, and she was always laughing. I have to say, Mitch, the only thing about my job that I don't like is that people will say, oh, you'd just die if you saw my office.
Right.
Like,
everyone says that. You probably wouldn't.
That's your office. It's your office. If you're happy with it, it doesn't bother me any.
Exactly.
But I could tell that she really was stressed. Well, she got a new job. And when somebody gets a new job, it's like, oh, you know, you really want them to get off to a good start. So I went to her and I said, look, I said, I'll give you 2 free hours of consulting time just because I want you to get started right. And I'd love for you to know what I do anyway, because then you'll be a good testimonial. She turned me down.
For free?
For free.
Okay.
Can't well, that was everyone. Pretty hard. Frankly, it was like, what's that mean? Well, finally, I explored it a little more. And it turned out, I said, it's for free. You know, why don't you try? Her fear was, I won't be able to maintain it, because she had hired 3 other organizers in 2 states for almost $10,000. And she was worse off than when she started. Why? Okay. Because they didn't deal with the real issue. So we worked together for an hour. At the end of an hour, she was so excited. And I said, so tell me, what's different about what we're doing than what you did before? And she said, well, number one, you said clutter is postponed decisions. And I never realized before that the reason I had all these papers everywhere was because I wasn't making decisions. She says, I didn't know that.
Just didn't occur to her.
Didn't occur to me.
Right.
She said, the second thing was, you kept asking me, what will you do? Because people, and actually Marie Kondo, her system is very popular. Many people use it and it works really well. David Allen isn't getting things done. He has a system. It really works. But we get David Allen and Marie Kondo dropouts because one size doesn't fit all.
Right.
Both of them have systems that say you should do such and such. And if you do it, absolutely it will work. But we get the dropouts because we've got people say, I don't want to do it that way. So our approach is to say, hey, look, what will you do? Organizing in and of itself has no value. And there are, in fact, people who spend their whole lives organizing and have nothing to show for it.
Right.
So what we start with, we have a 5-step process for organizing. So we're saying, if someone says, we want to get organized, we want to be more productive, our question is for what? Why? Right. Why do you want to get organized? So that's first one, state your vision.
Okay. Everything Second you do is one, systems. You systematize your system.
That's right.
Yeah, right.
Second one is identify your obstacles.
Okay.
What have you tried that didn't work before? What are you afraid of, et cetera? Right. Third is commit your resources.
Okay.
So how much money are you willing to invest? How much time? Who can help you? What software do you have? How much space do you have? All of that. So then step 4 is the most important, which is design and execute your plan. So in order to reach this vision, overcoming these obstacles with these resources, here's the plan. Let's come up with a plan. And then step 5 is where most people fall, which is sustain your success.
Right.
What system works right the first time?
Usually does.
So if something doesn't work,
you've got to,
or you have to adapt it. You have
adapt to, it you, to your style.
Organizing is an art form.
Right.
And so it's like, you know, changing it.
Sure.
So at any rate, We have that system. And it works every time, except if your why isn't big enough. Why are people afraid of making decisions? So my most recent book, it's not a new book, but my most recent book is called, I got a picture of it here, Less Clutter, More Life.
Okay.
And the premise is that physical and digital clutter is a symptom of emotional and spiritual clutter.
Yeah, I would agree that people they're overwhelmed with making decisions.
Well, my favorite page in the book is page 14 that says, what stops us? I never have enough time. I have better things to do. Organizing is boring. It's too difficult. It never lasts. I often overthink the situation. I didn't create it. I have no idea what's here. I'm easily distracted and go off on tangents.
Right.
I get stuck in the emotions and memories of the past. It's too emotionally draining. This is a big one now. I want to be responsible and respectful of the things I've been given. I have to take care of other people and other things in my life first. It's hard to admit I have an issue. I'm afraid to let something go. I might want it back.
Those are people that they can't get out of their own way. You know what I mean? Like they just, yeah.
Well, one of the things I've learned is I did some work with hoarders for a while. So I learned a lot about the emotional part of it, which we all have, just not to that extent.
Right. Any abnormal psych problems are just extreme normal things.
Yeah, that's right. So what I learned was if someone has trouble letting go. So for example, if somebody reaches out to us, we have them fill out a scorecard. And one of the questions is, on a scale of 1 to 10, do you have enough space?
Okay.
And if they say 6 to 10, yeah, it's fine. If they say 1, that's a red flag. And I say, do you have trouble letting go of things? And if they say yes, it's like, okay, we have to have more conversations. You cannot put 2 cups of milk in a 1 cup container.
Right.
So if there's a space problem and you won't let go of things, then we've got to deal with the issues. Yeah. If I find, and this is probably the most important thing I have to say in this interview, if you have trouble letting go of things, whatever those things are, whether they're physical or digital documents or articles you plan to read or magazines you're going to read, whatever it is, if I ask enough questions, we would find out that there's an emotion behind that.
Of course.
And that probably you had some severe emotional loss in your life.
And you're trying to compensate for that.
That's right. Yeah. I met a man who said when I first moved to Raleigh, I used to do a lot of trade shows. And he was always at the trade show. Never bought anything, but he was always there. And he heard me say that. And one day he came up to me and he said, he was in his early 60s. And he said, I know when my clutter problem started. He said it was when I lost the job I loved at age 55 and never found anything to replace it.
Right.
So the reason I say that clutter can be a spiritual problem is I believe God created us for a reason, for a purpose.
I hope so.
Yeah, I know that.
And we got no other reason for being here.
That's right. And he didn't have a purpose.
Right.
So when you don't have a purpose or when you're not clear about a purpose, anything can be potentially valuable. So it's like, I can't let go of it.
Right.
So one of our taglines is accomplish your work and enjoy your life.
Good.
So if somebody's having trouble letting go or trying to decide, we just say, does this, whatever this is, this physical thing, this digital thing, this idea, this to-do on your to-do list, does this help you accomplish your work or enjoy your life? And if you're clear about what that is, then it's easy to decide. If you're not clear, then it isn't. But here's the good news. And this I think is the biggest value we bring to people.
Right.
If you are not clear about what your vision is, getting rid of the clutter is a great place to start because it's like peeling the layers of an onion. So I learned that my first marriage ended after 14 years. I was devastated. Nobody in my family had ever been divorced. I had these three adopted children. I adored my husband. I just thought he was perfect. And I was devastated. I was sitting in a counselor's office and she said, okay, Barbara, you have a blank slate. What do you want?
Right.
And I said, I have no clue. I said, I was Mrs. Tom and I expected to be Mrs. Tom for at least 5 decades. And I don't really know. She made a statement that changed my life and which we use in our consulting all the time now. And that was, let's start with what you don't want, meaning clutter. So everybody has things that they know are clutter, but they often right. don't deal with them because there's things they don't know. So then they don't do any of it.
Well, that's why we have therapy, we go in coaching and all that stuff, help you explore those things.
So one of the things we do, which is in the 40 years I've been in business, the most exciting thing that we do, we call it either a productive environment day or a productivity party, depending on the culture of the organization. But it's a one-day event for a group of people that share a physical space and share information.
Okay.
And we work with management ahead of time to make sure to identify whatever records retentions they have, because we're not doing anything that's going to be dangerous
right.
here.
Right.
We arrange to set up shredding stations, recycling stations, trash to treasure. So that's personal places to put mugs you don't want. And the most important is a staging area. And a staging area is where you put the things where this is in my office, but I don't want it and I don't know what to do with it. So then you can take it to the staging area. So at the end of the day, management can decide. We give $10 Starbucks cards for the funniest thing, the most worthless thing, the most valuable thing, that kind of thing.
Make it
and
fun.
Then we start the day with a seminar called Sometimes It Takes an Expert to Take Out the Trash. And then we say, you have one assignment today and one only, and that is to go through your office as fast as you can, pick up every item in it and say, does this help me accomplish my work or enjoy my life? And if it doesn't, you now have a place to put it. It's clutter and you can't afford it.
Right.
So now you have a place to put it. And if you get stuck, go on. If you get stuck, just move to something else and just do it. It is amazing what happens, Mitch. At the beginning, employees are
I'm sure it's transformative, right?
Oh,
you always feel good after a day of cleaning out your basement or getting organized. Everything's all, I mean, at least the way I am, everything's all in nice place and ready and you can really enjoy it. And then, you know, it always gets a little ahead of you, especially at home when you're trying to, especially things like coronavirus. I mean, so my wife said before the end of the year, we're going to clean out the basement. We're going to do this and that. She's a big, she falls behind, but she's a big organizer. Now, so if people want to get a hold of you, first of all, are your books available on like Amazon?
Amazon in both
right.
print and digital.
Okay,
yes.
So
and
we'll
we have
some
a
links
new
on
one.
Our, we're launching a podcast store on the law firm website. So we'll put some links to the Amazon book. We could probably make 14 cents or something every time they buy a book on the site. And how can people interact with you as well? Cause they might be like, oh, my life and my business is a mess. I got to call Barbara. How do they go to your website or something? Or
yeah, if you go to productiveenvironment.com,
okay.
there's all kinds of resources there. And
we'll
you can
put a link
fill
in
out
the
a
show notes too.
If you fill out a scorecard, we'll give you a free, one of our consultants, I have consultants all around the world. One of them will do a free 30-minute consultation with you. And it's not a sales pitch. It's helping you figure out something you really can do to get started on your journey to organization. And then we also have a free network. We call it, it's for organizers and organizees.
Okay.
So it's for people who like to help people get organized and people like to be organized. It's called productiveenvironmentnetwork.com.
Okay.
There's all kinds of free videos and opportunity to interact and things like that. So there's-
right, we'll put that all in the show notes so people can connect and get their lives
fantastic.
Organized. Well, Barbara, I can't thank you enough for spending time with me. This is, I told you, fascinating stuff. And like organization in my life, when I was like in college and I'd have an apartment, you could like go into my apartment, move something a little bit. I would walk back in and be like, wait, somebody moved something. Like that's the way I was. Now with kids and life, I mean, coronavirus, I got things all over my office. I got to get more organized. But probably most people walking into my office will be like, you're pretty organized, even though I don't feel that way, you know?
The garage, then you talked about you and your wife.
Yeah.
That 5-step process I use, literally, you can have a conversation with your wife and say, okay, what's our vision for this garage? If the garage were organized, how would it be different than it is now? And then number two is like, okay, what are our obstacles? Well, we have differing opinions on what we want, and maybe we don't have enough space, or we don't know where to put it or whatever. Then the third one is, okay, what are our resources? Like, are we going to do an all day Saturday, or are we going to do 1 hour a day, 5 days a week? Or, right. And are we going to help? Are the kids going to be involved and whatever? Then you can say, okay, in order to reach this vision, overcoming these obstacles with these resources, here's the plan. And I had one of my clients say, I use that in our family, planned our vacation that way. So that five steps really, really works.
Well, I appreciate it. I will definitely take it to heart. I'll tell my wife as we get started in our fall project. And I can't thank you enough.
If you like the podcast, please tell others about us. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, on Google Podcasts, on Amazon Music, and many of the other podcast directories. If you like what you hear, please leave us a 5-star review and feel free to share our episodes on social media. If you have any questions or comments, ideas for the show, or you'd even like to appear as a guest, reach out to us by email at info@beinhackerlaw.com. The Accidental Entrepreneur is hosted and produced by me, Mitch Beinhacker. If you'd like more information about my legal services, you can find me on social media or visit my website at beinhackerlaw.com. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe to our feed to be notified of all future episodes.